Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's an exciting day for me for two reasons. I'm going to hand it off soon to my new host, Brad Salozzi, author of Liquid Leadership, who I met in California. The second reason is we have probably the most well-known guest ever on this network, Bruce Buffer, the ring announcer for UFC and the voice of MMA. Take it away, Brad.
Hi, Tom. Hey, thank you so much for having me on today's show. And I just want to say, Tom and I met at the Napoleon Hill Think and Grow Rich Summit, and I got to tell you, it was a blast hearing your message, Tom.
Thank you. Well, sure. I am going to sit back, and I'm going to enjoy being a listener, so take it away.
All right. Before we start, I want to ask a question. How many of you struggle with success? It seems to be a hard road some days, challenging and frustrating at times, but incredibly rewarding. If only you had a secret or a strategy that could help you right here, right now. And that is what Journey to Success Radio is all about. We're here to give you the tools, tactics, and secrets from today's cutting-edge entrepreneurs and business professionals. So as you listen to today's show, keep a pen and paper handy and jot down a few notes, because you are going to come away with plenty of rewarding ideas, guaranteed. And I'm honored today that Tom chose me to be in the driver's seat for today's show. Although I wrote the 21st Century Guidebook entitled Liquid Leadership, which delves deeply into the new leadership styles, I believe Tom asked me to sit in today's chair because I'm a third-degree brown belt in the mixed martial art of modern Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu, and I just love watching the UFC fights. I don't know if anybody tuning in has watched the fights. How about you, Tom? Have you watched?
Oh, I'm a fan, yes, definitely.
Okay.
And in Canada, they are huge, the UFC.
Right. I can't believe the last fight, which was with Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman. It was just phenomenal. What a knockout. But let me get to our guest today. I believe he's on the line. Bruce, are you there?
I sure am.
Hi, Bruce. I'm about to get to your introduction, and I got to tell you, we're honored to have you on today's show. And let me just give a few highlights here. Many of you know that Bruce is the voice of the UFC Octagon. And Bruce Buffer has been the official voice of the Octagon for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, UFC, since 1997, and with many other mixed martial arts events worldwide, and is recognized internationally as the voice of mixed martial arts. The UFC is seen worldwide on satellite and cable TV pay-per-view. He was also on Spike TV's hit series UFC Unleashed and The Ultimate Fight Night, and now appears on all Fox Network televised UFC events and pay-per-views viewed by millions worldwide. Bruce is also the president and CEO of Buffer Enterprises Incorporated, through which he manages his entrepreneurial ventures. He has proven himself as a motivational speaker and has received praise from top industry professionals for his management and guidance of the successful career of his brother, Michael Buffer, the world-famous sports and entertainment announcer. His work involves the creation, design, and management of all products and promotional licensing surrounding Michael Buffer's world-famous Let's Get Ready to Rumble trademark phrase, which has grown into a major international enterprise approaching, get this, $400 million in retail sales worldwide and growing. He has expanded the Let's Get Ready to Rumble brand, which has become a part of American sports culture, into all areas of sports, entertainment, and merchandising. As a ranked professional poker player on the pro tournament poker circuit, he has been seen on NBC's Poker After Dark, the Travel Channel's popular World Poker Tour TV show, featuring his playing at the final table of the 2005 WPT LA Invitational, where he placed sixth after being eliminated by pro player Chris Jesus Ferguson. He also co-starred in the critically acclaimed instructional poker DVD, All In, along with poker pro Phil Gordon. A favorite film is Jerry Maguire, starring Tom Cruise, and Bruce states, "I live this every day. Some people say, show me the money. I say, show me the rumble." Bruce is a classified as a true entrepreneur, an announcer, an entertainer, a motivational speaker, and a business pro. It's time. Please welcome to the show, Bruce Buffer.
Well, thanks very much for the introduction. I'm actually kind of exhausted hearing about myself. I feel like I just worked a week.
There you go. Now, you've just written a book. You're the announcer, but a lot of people listening, Bruce, may not know that you hold a second-degree black belt in Tang Soo Do, and you were a kickboxer. And you're not just a voice in the ring. You know the sport. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I first entered the world of martial arts when I was 12, when I entered the world of judo. And I achieved a green belt there, and then my family moved out to Malibu, California, where at that time, back in 1972, you didn't have to be rich like you have to be today to live there, considering what it cost to move there. But there were plenty of middle-class families, and all the rich actors lived at the beach. And I had the pleasure of becoming friends with the great actor Steve McQueen, and his son Chad became my best friend. And there was a heavy martial arts community out there, of which mm-hmm. Bruce Lee was training Steve, and Chuck Norris would come over to his house. I never got the chance to meet Bruce Lee, although it was just an honor even looking at the credentialed award that he gave Steve McQueen sitting on the wall. I was always in awe of that, and I still am today when I go over his house. But Tang Soo Do, which is the Korean art, the brother or sister art to Taekwondo, and the original art of Chuck Norris when he was in the Air Force in Korea. So I immersed myself in there, and then in my early 20s, based on the experience I'd had in the surf culture and growing up in Philadelphia and Texas, you know, with street fights or altercations, as we've all gone through to whatever level we've gone through them, I wanted to fight for real. And I entered the world of kickboxing and very heavily trained and sparred and fought for, I guess, 7 years. I would say 7-8 years until after my second concussion that I know of, the doctor warned me that I had to stop. And I just relegated myself just to training and stopped any sparring whatsoever. I was 32 at the time.
Wow. Well, as I said before you came on, I'm a third-degree brown belt in the modern Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu, and I've had 3 broken ribs, broken toe. I've been knocked out voluntarily once, black eyes, jammed my fingers, and you said something in the book that I say to all my friends whenever they ask me, why do you do this? It's because I love it.
It's passion.
Yeah, and passion for it. And I think as an entrepreneur, as a business person, that's where the root of everything that you do lies. It's in the passion of that. And I love how you wrote the book, by the way. And for those of you listening, the name of Bruce's book is It's Time, My 360-Degree View of the UFC. And you talk about spraining your ankle one night in a casino. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and if I may, I just want to thank you again. Your words you're honoring me with during this interview, they really are special to me. And just the fact that you read the book, as anybody that would read my book, it's an honor too, because there's so much that goes into writing a book. You have to open up your heart. You've got to really spill it out there. Otherwise, you're just writing an item anybody can look on Wikipedia or Google and find out information about. I wanted this book to be about stuff that people had no idea about me and about my experiences both in and out of the UFC. Regarding the sprained ankle, when I was kickboxing, I rolled my ankles a number of times. You know, you throw a kick to the head of the body, come down, and fighting a bigger guy, you might land on his foot, and all of a sudden, boom, you roll your ankle, whatever the case might be. And I happened to have rolled it, of all things, at a poker tournament. It was a break in the poker tournament, and I was walking. There was a little dip in the carpet, and my ankle just rolled, and it's like, damn, what did I just do? And then I woke up the next morning, and my ankle was swollen. Well, it swelled that day, but it was swollen so bad, I went to the hospital, the emergency hospital, and they pulled blood out of it, not water. It was very traumatized. And I couldn't stand on my ankle up till Wednesday of the week of Saturday, which was the week of the biggest UFC in history, which was Toronto, with 55,000 people, sold out in less than 24 hours, with George St. Pierre fighting Jake Shields. And, you know, we're all geared up for this. It's another night, an epic night, kind of like the tough Series 1 fight with Bonner and Griffin. There was going to be a turning point in the UFC's historical evolutionary process. So I'm like, how am I going to do this? You know, I can't stand. I want to announce because I'm very physical. So I muscled up. I got everything going. And then when I was in the octagon, everything went great. It all went wonderful. I came out, gave the main event the big intro, did a grounded 360 move because the aerial 360s retired after I did that in front of Brock Lesnar. got air on its time. Did a 180 into the blue corner, did an aerial, like airborne 180 into the red. I don't mean to sound like these moves are anything amazing or whatever, but for me, I had never done that, like jump up and spun around in the air as I'm announcing on a 180. And because
right.
Everybody's saying, do the 360, jump up. And I go, no, that's retired, but I'll give you something. I'll give you something to get you excited. And then I go into George's corner, and I give him the big intro, and I start roaring his name, you know, George, Rush. And as soon as I went into the Saint, he lunged out, which he has a tendency to do. And I just bunny hop back, which I'm aware he's going to do it, and I was prepared for it. But when I bunny hop back, that ankle I rolled, which was my right ankle, wobbled. And when it landed, my knee blew. I blew my ACL, completely blew it apart. Tore the meniscus in three places. But like De Niro in Raging Bull, I can honestly say, you didn't put me down, Ray, or you didn't put me down, George. I'm still standing. It's all good. And then when I put the microphone underneath Herb Dean's arm, my knee was moving forward and backward out of place, and I realized that, I just gave up a piece of my body here. I just blew my knee. And I'm like,
right.
You know, I don't want to curse on your show, but I said a few things to myself and kept that, you know, my face, my octagon face on. But when I got out of the octagon, and you can see it on the video, I'm literally hopping out on one leg. And John McCarthy, big John McCarthy, says, you know what, Buff, I think you blew your ACL. And Stitch
wow.
starts putting ice on my knee. I mean, what's wrong with that picture? The two great warriors are fighting in the octagon, and the tuxedoed announcer's got ice on his knee, and he's the one that gets hurt. But it happened. You know, things take place. My only worry was is the next week we had a two-week shoot for Here Comes the Boom, the movie with Kevin James in Boston. I had UFC's six out of eight weekends basically spread over the next 2.5-3 months. So I went to see the doctor. Sorry for my long-windedness here. But I went to see the doctor.
Ahead.
Thank you. I went to see the doctor, Elitrosh, who's just a great doctor. And he worked Tom Brady's knee when he blew it. From the New England Patriots, the quarterback. He also fixed George St. Pierre's knee, who blew his ACL about 5-6 months after I did, or 4 months after I did. George and I both wound up in the same rehab center together, which is kind of funny when you think about it. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, like, you know, I met him and I said, what can I do? He says, it's going to take you 3 to 6 months under normal conditions to get back to being who you'd like to be, 6 months specifically. I said, I can't wait 3 to 6 months. I got to get out there and announce now. So
right.
Marlon Shirley, the Paralympian who runs on the blades with no legs,
right.
His company, Osser, he had his company. He and I know ourselves from the poker world. I called him up, and he said, Buff, let me just get on something. So he had to make a special brace for me. And I braced my knee up for 3 months to where it held in place. And also where I could train. I trained very hard. I was pushing more weight than I pushed when my knee was good to prepare for the operation. And Dr. Elitrosh swore to me that I had this window 4 weeks. I said, I'll go in and get operated on the 6th. I said, but Doc, I got to walk up those stairs into Philadelphia on August 7th or 8th. He said, don't worry. You do what you do. You train like you're training. You listen to me. You'll be walking up those stairs. And when I was in rehab with the machine moving my knee up and down, or rather the week after the operation, when you just have to lie in bed and let the knee move up and down and get back into a movement before you can start walking and entertaining, working out and stuff, I was worried. I'll be honest with you. I was worried, will I ever be able to announce the way I love to announce again? And that's when I decided to write the book. I'd been pushed to write the book for a couple of years before that, actually set out to do it, wasn't happy the way it was going. And I thought, you know what, now it's time for me to tell everybody how I got here, and that was the emphasis for me writing the book.
Wow. You know, you touched on a lot of points, and that is this sort of never give up, never surrender. But there is a point in every entrepreneur, business person, sports figure's career where they get an injury, and they have to reassess, they have to adjust, they have to change or adapt to the situation. And I think this was a perfect moment for you to step back and to write the book, as you said, because it's kind of like the universe was telling you, hey, Bruce, we need this out in the world right now.
Well, I wanted to write, I agree, and I wanted to write a book that was motivational. It's a story about life, love, the pursuit of happiness, about family, which I'm very big on, as you know from reading the book,
right.
An honorarium to my father and my mother, my brother Brian, and, of course, Michael. And to tell the story, I mean, there's just so many, like everybody, we all go through great things, but I'm 56 now. I've been through a lot of things in my life. A lot more is about to take place, of course. But I just wanted to share my story. And the one thing I wanted to get across is, whether, you know, I walk around and like, oh, get his autograph, get his picture, voice of the octagon, this, that, and the other. I mean, I love all that. I'm honored by that. I've worked, you know, almost 20 years to get to this point, along with all the other warriors and people involved with the UFC, thanks to a lot, tremendously thanks to Dana White, Lorenzo, and Frank Fertitta for all they've done for us. And I love being their loyal soldier and getting out there and doing my job. But I'm no better than anybody else. I truly believe that without the God, you know, without the fact that some people were born with God-given speed, fighting talents like John Jones or Michael Phelps' ability to swim, the bottom line is we're all created equal. So to me, it's all about the paths we choose and doing the best we can on that path, being the best role model, and treating everybody with respect, which I'm sorry to say in this world we live in today, we live in a decaying society of morality, and I'll be damned if it's ever going to affect me. I'm going to stand tall and be the chivalrous white knight that I was raised to be and always will be.
Awesome that you said that. I want to touch a little bit on this. Your father and my father sound like they were raised in the same place. My dad was a tough Hungarian, first born in this country, and he felt you got to punch and you got to stand up for your what you believe in and things like that. Tell us a little bit. You touch on this in the book. I was really touched by this father-son tribute that you talk about, because your father was the boxer Johnny Buff. Am I correct?
No, my grandfather was Johnny Buff, who was the flyweight bantamweight champion of the world in 1921.
Wow.
Bert Sugar, who passed away last year or recently, said that he was the greatest fighter of 1921. I never had the pleasure of meeting him. He actually died the year I was born, or 2 years before, 55 or 57. My dad grew up in the tough streets of New York, was actually on his way to sort of like Mike Tyson. You know, it was like, you either go down this road or you go down this road. And his enlistment into the military was what helped shape him. He was basically of a borderline genius IQ. He never graduated high school, a very self-made man, extremely brilliant in his ways. He ran Fortune 500 companies. He quit with the money he had in the bank when we were living in Malibu at the time to become what he had been earlier, which was a writer. And all that story is in the book, too. You know, we basically were a family that went broke together, worked together to make money, and we lived a very wonderful lifestyle that he provided. If my dad had $100 left in the bank, he took us out to dinner because he always knew that he would make more money, as I do. If I go broke tomorrow, I always know I'll make money. I'm never worried about making money. It's about what I choose to make the money with. It's my choice in life. And that's why I gave up two very successful businesses based on the teachings that my father taught me, with the beach house and living the life of Riley as I was back in 92 and the whole bit, and I risked everything to manage my brother's career, who I had just met, not knowing he existed, seeing him on TV, as the story tells in the book, which was Michael Buffer, and promising him that I was going to make him richer and more famous than he ever dreamed. I wanted to trademark the phrase properly and make toys and video games and put the saying on the tip of everybody's tongue in American culture and international culture. And basically his conversation was, you know, how are you going to do that? And I said, listen, if I'm going to give all this up, and being the person I am, and you know what business acumen I have, then you have to believe in me and know that also I want to announce. And we agreed I wouldn't do boxing, and I said back in, you know, at that time, don't worry, something will come along, and I'll find my niche. But getting back to my dad, it was my dad that taught me, along with my mother, the great things that my mom taught me and still does, as wonderfully she's still alive. I lost my dad 5 years ago. The teachings that I got from these people and the wonderful upbringing and all the ups and downs and trials and tribulations of life that we went through made us a very tight-knit family. And my dad was tough. And like I say in the book, you don't know where you are till you're punched in the face. And my dad was teaching me street fighting techniques before I went off to school in Philadelphia when I was 5 or 6 years old. And I remember the first time I ever did it, I got attacked from behind. And he said, you know, you ever attack from behind, you know, throw your head back, or bottom line, pick up your foot and stomp his foot as hard as you can. That's exactly what I did. And I remember the kid cried and ran off. And I thought, you know, Dad, that stuff works. Teach me more. Yeah.
And you said he never bothered you again. I remember that line in the book.
Never bothered me again. When a bully comes up to you, my dad just said, punch him right in the nose as hard as you can. Punch him right in the nose. Whether you get beat up or not, you got to stand your ground. With life and in business, punch the businessman, punch the bad guy, punch the bully right in the nose.
There you go. That's how it is. I hope everybody's taking notes that's listening in today, because you're getting the real deal from Bruce Buffer. Now, what did you think about the last fight? Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, most fighters, including George St. Pierre, picked Chris to win. I knew it was going to be a war. I always am an equal opportunity announcer. I announce everybody equally because you never know who's going to win. I mean, granted, I'm right probably 80-plus percent of the time, but I never bet on fights. I just want to see a great fight. And it's always, to me, when I'm asked who's going to win, I always say, may the best man win. But when Anderson, who I love, I mean, he's a friend. I've been with Anderson announcing him for years, a great guy. But the bottom line is, when you start doing that showboat crap, you know, and especially with Roy Jones sitting first row, I think it caused him even to go overboard even more. Because you know how Roy was when he fought, and he got whacked out a couple times as a result or towards the end of his career. It's like karma. Karma hit Anderson right in the ass. And he got hit. He got knocked out. Forbes magazine said Weidman winning would be one of the best things for the UFC from a marketing standpoint, I assume. And lo and behold, they're going to fight again on December 28th. And don't cry for anybody in this, because from $98,000 that Weidman made, I was reported, he'll probably, I would assume, make hundreds of thousands more with the big fight. Anderson's going to make more millions because he's, you know, probably the highest paid or one of the highest paid fighters in the UFC. We don't even know exactly how much he makes because you can't go by what's reported. So and the UFC is going to benefit too, and we're all going to. I'm going to benefit. We're all going to benefit. Ronda Rousey's going to benefit because more eyeballs are going to be on her as the co-main event instead of the main event, in my opinion. So it's a win-win, but it's a hash mark or a black mark on his career. So he's going to. I think Anderson's going to come out like a ferocious beast, but again, so is Weidman. So can you predict who's going to win? Nobody knows. But I guarantee you that in Anderson's mind, he wants to stand up and whack Weidman out. He wants to show, he's probably going to showboat again. To what level, I don't know. He's already stated, I'm still going to fight my fight.
Exactly. Well,
but I don't like it. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I don't like it. I hate showboating. I hate it. I hate when athletes in the NFL run in the end zone and they act like they just scored the winning touchdown of the Super Bowl and they're down 14 points. It's like, come on. Get a break. I like the old days when the guys dropped the ball and got back in. It's like, okay, next play. I mean, that's the way I am. Okay, I did it. Next play. Go.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, I'm my specialty, and the reason Tom Cunningham chose me to be the guest host today is I specialize in the generational issues that affect business and teachers and parents and things like this. And do you see a shift between one generation to the next in the style and the respect and things like that?
Horrible shift. Horrible shift. Mm-hmm. It stems from a couple things. I see, again, I get back to the decaying, you know, society and morality in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that there's anything wrong, but I'll go down to as little as guys walking around with their pants down around the back of their knees. You know, hey, I can't wait till somebody walks up to them and wants to punch them in the nose or take them out. How fast are you going to run down the street when you can't even run? Yeah, how are you going to throw a kick when you can't even lift your leg? You know, much less if that's what girls find attractive, that's the last girl I want to go out with. So then, you know, then all to the point of, you know, thank you, hello, how are you, holding the door for a date, opening the door for a date, walking behind, you know, all the gentlemanly things that I was taught in my generation to the next generation, which also transform into school and business. Now we live in an ADD society, which involves, and great, these are great tools, texting and you know, all the things we have at our disposal. But when you see 12-year-olds sitting on couches in the same room communicating with each other via text, the art of communication is going downhill. You're going to be hard-fetched in 10 years, and I've trained thousands of salespeople from my sales background and the companies I've owned. It's like, would I hire somebody that walked into my office looking like that, acting like that, not even making eye contact with me because they weren't taught communication skills properly to represent my company and my products? No. No, absolutely not. You could be the nicest kid in the world, but it's not going to work. You know, where's the salesmen are going to be a dying art, I think, in 10 years, because communication skills are going downhill.
I agree. And I think anybody listening today, if you have a young entrepreneur or a nephew or a son or a daughter, these are key skills that they need to be taught, which is this communication, this eye contact, shake the hand, and speak properly. And it is a dying art. Also, respect. I've noticed that the young fighters who have not trained in the martial arts but just basically came in and wanted to learn how to be a fighter, they have a different sense or lack of respect in the ring that you see when Georges St. Pierre wins or loses. He immediately tries to find his gi top and his belt, and he wants to look proper before the ceremony, the belt ceremony. I just eat that up because I have that traditional martial arts background. I love to see it. Lyoto Machida does it. Georges St. Pierre, as I said, that respect in the ring. Have you noticed that?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, traditional martial arts, You know, again, it all started with the spectacle of the UFC, which eventually 6-7 years later was judged mixed martial arts. And a term quoted by a gentleman who passed recently that was the commentator for the UFC, the man who won the medal who overcame cancer. Pardon me, his name has escaped me right now, and I hate myself for it. But in the beginning, it was a spectacle, style versus style. But
right.
when you train in Taekwondo, when you train in Kenpo, when you train in, you know, in Jiu-Jitsu, you're taught respect, you're taught honor, you're taught putting your blood, sweat, and tears on the mat when you go out to face your opponent. You're taught to treat your opponent with respect. In the old days, it's similar like the old days when I was raised, and my dad told me, he said, you know, when you get into a brawl, and I certainly had my share of them, you know, unless the guy was a complete a-hole or somebody like a really bad person, you know, or a criminal, bottom line is, it was like, let's have a beer afterwards, you know? Okay, we got it settled. Okay, in the octagon, yes, George does that. When you have non-traditional fighters coming in, they don't have a gi to reach for. They don't have a belt to put around their neck and show respect for without it hitting the ground and all the things that go with it, as long as they handle themselves respectfully. Like, for instance, I love the Diaz brothers. I know them. They're cool. I mean, when I say
yes.
love, I mean, I appreciate they're really cool. But when they stick their fingers in the air, they're not cool. I hate that. I absolutely hate it. I've told them that. I hate it. You know, but that's their thing, and that's the way they are. I'm not going to, I'll judge them, but I'm not going to knock them for how they were raised. So you really got to look at the source, you know, how the individuals were raised, where they came from. But when you look at martial arts, and especially MMA and the UFC versus the world of boxing, which I, you know, certainly love. I've worked in it for 20 years and you know, been an avid boxing fan since I was probably out of the womb. My dad had me watching boxing, like, you know, within a month. The bottom line is that there's a bit of a difference, and that difference is based on what you just said, because traditional martial arts teaches us to handle ourselves that way, and
right.
that's good. That's why I appreciate when, you know, people put their children into, you know, the standard martial art. I mean, granted, I think MMA is the way to go. I even think for an adult, Krav Maga is the way to go, because you're just talking about defending yourself and being able to react. But this is what martial arts teaches, and there's a much higher system of honor and respect. Probably versus almost any other sport.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly, because that respect for the hierarchy of training and your senseis and the master structure, you really learn that it's an ongoing journey. I've learned that for myself. I didn't start training in mixed martial arts until I was 45 years of age, because my nephew at 16 got his black belt, and he said, "Hey, Uncle Brad, why don't we go to the dojo and you come with me and you train?" And I worked very hard to get into shape by taking the cardio kickboxing, but the bowing and the learning and learning respect and learning from black belts was probably the most fun I've ever had. And it's not easy. You know that.
It's not supposed to be easy. Yeah.
No, but learning late in life, I really just ate it up. I love it, like I said before, but I do see this disconnect, and it's going to be a very hard road in the next 10 years as this next generation takes over. And I wonder if you want to comment on where do you think this is going to be heading?
Well, I think this is where the value of the UFC and hopefully the other MMA organizations that are out there come into effect. Is that it's been coined today that 76% of all males in the U.S. From 18 to 34 years of age are fans of the UFC. Staggering quote, because I don't even think football has 76% of a fan base of the 18 to 34 males. So with that, then the wonderful way that the UFC is marketing itself and projecting itself, dealing, you know, with a few minor things put forth by some of the individual athletes, and again, I get any minor to the overall picture. This is a role model image that will hopefully help people upcoming, because they're growing up with their eyeballs on the UFC, and they see George and Lyoto and others with their respect. They see fighters going in that aren't from traditional dojo martial arts backgrounds that after a fight or during the fight hug their opponent, you know, reach out to show the respect factor, along with the little, bad blood fights that happen here and there, whether it's marketing, whether it's real, whether it's not. I mean, hopefully at the end, whether it's Rampage Jackson going over and hugging his opponent or whatever, it's over. We got through it. Okay, now we go on. We're equals. We respect each other. On to the next. So hopefully this will strengthen the respect factor in the issues that we're discussing from the standpoint of the eyeballs of the youth that are following fighting as one of their favorite sports, being MMA, and that we're helping with that situation. Other than that, all I can tell you is that as an individual, I will just do everything I can to maintain that status, for the eyeballs that are upon me. And I know they're on me, but it's not about me. The show's not about me. It's about the fighters,
right,
and it's for the fans.
That's fantastic. Do you want to mention just a little bit how you became an announcer?
Well, when I was always fascinated by being on stage and speaking in front of people. I'd done motivational speaking in my companies, especially when I owned a nutritional company. I was teaching health and how to, get wealthy from selling the products, across the country with my company at the time. And I really enjoyed being in front of people. I wanted to be an actor when I was younger, fascinated with, the action heroes of my day, whether it's Errol Flynn or James Cagney and that were before my day, or the Steve McQueen, status, Mr. Cool, after my day, Clint Eastwood. I was just fascinated by all this. But I studied acting, and then when I went into the sales realm, I started my first telemarketing company, and I had actors up and coming working for me, both actors and actresses. And I saw how they were just ruined, with their auditions and pounding the pavement and going through the rejection. Well, everybody's got to be able to handle rejection in life, but I didn't really have that passionate a point to pound the boards to get the job. So I just started, building my career in business. And I love teaching salespeople because I love helping people better themselves. I love seeing people make money. And I have a very simple theory in my life that, to me, no matter what I'm involved with, whether it's the UFC or a company with salespeople and secretaries and shippers down to the lowest level employee, who is just as important, because life is a pyramid. I'm at the top, running the company, but everybody underneath me, down to the people that form the base, the shippers, the drivers, everything, they will keep the company alive too. So I believe everybody's important. I want everybody around me to be successful, and then it comes back to me, both in income and in joy and passion for what I do, not necessarily all in that order. So I approached that same thing when I was thinking about announcing, when I saw my brother, and then when I finally met my brother, and as I told you earlier, had my plans for his career, and made no bomb about the fact that I wanted to announce myself. But I, when boxing didn't happen and the UFC came along, I knew that was the world for me. That's where I needed to be. But my, loyalty to my client, which in turn was my brother, I wanted to put him in every area of sports and entertainment that was popular. So I made the deal for him in the UFC, and then it was a 3-fight deal. And after the first fight, I got an issue with the WCW Wrestling League, which was huge at the time. And I developed a huge contract for him there, and they had a problem with him announcing the UFC. And it was a simple matter of economic logistics and popularity, and I realized that the WCW was very important for Michael to stay in to fulfill my plans for him and also his personal want for his work career. So when they pulled him out, I said, guys, you need a buffer in the octagon. I go, I've got media contacts. I love this sport. I'll help you build the sport. I'll help you build a brand. I'll be much more than an announcer for you. Let me show you what I got. Well, it fell on deaf ears. They didn't hire me. I did not get the job because Michael Buffer was my brother. By any standard, I did not get the job because of that. And I thought, how am I going to do this? So I got a tape sent to me by this 340-pound monster named Scott the Pitbull Ferrazzo from Minnesota asking me to get him in the UFC. And this guy was like a Tank Abbott, bar fighter, but even a little more skilled. So I got him into UFC 8 in Puerto Rico. And as his manager, they flew me down with him. So I notified the owner, Robert Meyerowitz, and I go into grand detail in the book about this. And I said, look, I'm coming down with my fighter. I'm bringing my tux. Let me show you what I got. Let me get in the octagon and announce the prelims. And he agreed, eventually agreed. And I did it, thought I did a good job, and they didn't call me back. So they had Rich G. Mangoins, who, very nice guy, did a very good job, and he was their announcer. And suddenly I get a call about 6 months later. I'm in the hospital with my mom. She's had a very serious operation. We're in the recovery room, in her room, recovering from getting cut open and all. And my phone rings, and it's the owner's assistant, or right-hand man, and he's basically, Buff, we need you in Alabama in 2 days. Can you get down there? Rich G. Mangoins' father, uncle, passed away. He's got to go to the funeral. And we need you to do the whole show. And I'm like, guys, I'm in the hospital. My family's everything to me. I'll call you back. So my mom overheard the conversation, in a half, stupor from the morphine and everything going on. And it was like a scene out of Rocky with Talia Shire. And I explained to her what happened, and she just holds up her finger. She holds up her thumb, and she goes, you go. You got to go. And I was out of there like a bat out of the cave, And I went down there, did the show, thought I did a good job, and thought they'd hire me then. And no, they didn't hire me. They hired somebody else. They hired a friend of the producer. Now I'm like, this is crazy. So I'd stop in New York. I'd take them out for drinks or offer to do everything I can, because I firmly believe when you want something, you got to ask for it, be it a job, a sale, a date with a girl. You just ask for it. What's the worst that's going to happen? They say no. So long story cut short, they called me and they said, look, this is another 6 months go by. This is over the course of like a year and a half. And they go, look, we're doing a show with friends, which was in its second season and huge back then. And they said, we're doing The Ultimate Champion. And do you want to co-star as yourself? John McCarthy, Tank Abbott's on. I said, sure. So I wound up going and rehearsing the next morning and doing the show. But I told Robert Meyerowitz, I said, the owner, I said, you got to meet me on the set. I go, I got to talk to you. And I made no bones about it. I said, I'm going for it now. I'm going to give this up. And I told him, I said, I feel like a girl waiting for a date to the prom. I go, let's make a decision here. I'm now going to co-star on the biggest comedy on TV. You're getting the most publicity you ever got. I can help you take it further with my media contacts, aside from my work in the Octagon. You know what I bring to the table business-wise. I said, make a deal. Let's make a deal. I want to announce every single show from now on. Best poker hand I ever played.
Wow. That is a great story. Wow. And that, you know, that just, that says a lot about how much you believed in yourself and the vision that you wanted. I'm also impressed that you helped your brother out so much. That really is impressive. But I want to switch some gears here real quick, because we're almost out of time. But they say in America you haven't really arrived unless you're in an action figure or you're in a video game. So let me just lay out some of the things that you've done. I mean, you have success. You have some major successfully licensed ventures, and they've developed the Ready to Rumble boxing video game franchise by Midway, Rumble Robots by Trendmasters, the Ready to Rumble electronic boxing ring by Manly Toy Quest, WCW wrestling toys by Toy Biz, and the Ready to Rumble movie by Warner Brothers. I mean, is there any media that you haven't been in?
Well, I haven't been on Dancing with the Stars yet, and if they call, I want to do it really bad. I would love to do that.
That would be great.
Yeah, I would really. Or, you know, eventually my plans are I'll be hosting my own TV show, aside from what I've done, you know, appearing on other shows. So I have plans for the future, but, you know, it's all going according to schedule, as they say. And, you know, as an individual, as myself, you know, who wouldn't want to have their own baseball card? And I have like 18 or 16 Topps baseball cards and the Round 5 action figure limited edition. And I'm sure you've watched Shark Tank.
Yes,
you ever see
that show? Shark
Tank. Well, Damon John, who created FUBU on the dais there sitting next to Mark Cuban, he came to L.A. and he loves the UFC. He thinks my trademark, It's Time, could be the next Just Do It. And he made me an offer I couldn't refuse. We have launched. It's just not in retail till next year. ITI, It's Time Industries, so it's my own clothing and apparel company, which will have other products. That's going to be a big thing for the future. I'm also working on a couple of online gaming, social gaming ventures, which are going to be announced, one in particular, in the next 8 months. I've always got things working, because I treat life and business with like chess, thinking three steps ahead. And outside of that, you know, traveling 30-plus weeks with the UFC, aside from other appearances, it's a busy life. It's, you know, it's wonderful. I wake up every morning being thankful. It's like being James Bond and not having to kill anybody. You know, it's great.
And you need the British accent, though.
Yeah,
you know,
I can put that on if I have to, but I'm a very honest guy.
There you go. You know, it really says a lot about staying power, working hard, playing hard, keeping the ball rolling, being positive about your journey. And I think it's amazing how many things are going on in your life. I mean, you've been on Friends, as you said before, with Robin Williams and Billy Crystal. You were in the motion picture Play It to the Bone, and you did the voiceover work in Clint Eastwood's 2004 Oscar winner A Million Dollar Baby, and Kevin James' film Here Comes the Boom. I mean, it's one thing after another. It's impressive. Pardon me. It's impressive as hell, your resume. It's just, I'm really honored that you're on today's show. I have to say that.
Well, I thank you again and again, and I really appreciate that. And see, the thing is, I don't, to me, accomplishments are grand accomplishments. I don't live on my laurels. I respect my laurels. To me, after I'm finished and reached achievement, they become fond memories, because the whole reason I created It's Time is because every day I wake up, it's time. It's time to make this the best day possible. It's time to achieve the next level. You know, I don't want to be the guy sitting around saying I was captain of the football team when I was in high school. which is great.
Right.
I want to keep moving and shaking until the point that I lose, not lose the passion, but it starts to wane a little bit for all I do, and then it's going to be time for me to contemplate retiring. But I don't see that happening for, you know, a minimum 5 to 10 years, because I'm physically still an athlete. I love what I do. There are sacrifices traveling as much as far as personal life and time lost from loved ones and, you know, love relationships and such that, you know, it causes issues at times. But, you know, that's all about finding the right person for your life. But don't cry for me. I live a great, exciting life, and I love what I do. But I just would love to, again, you know, if you ask me what was put on my tombstone, it's just, you know, I hope that I'm respected, and I just hope I was a good role model for people that, you know, have entrepreneurial thoughts in mind or just want to follow their passions. Because I don't care if you want to be the best busboy, actor, fighter, policeman, fireman, you know, businessman. It's not about being the richest guy in the world. It's about doing what you love to do and being the best at what you do, at least in your mind. If you can't respect yourself, it's going to be hard for you to respect others. And I think the first thing people need to work on is being happy and respecting themselves, you know, with good constructive egos, not conceited egos. I cannot stand arrogance or conceit. It's just about being constructive and realistic.
That's phenomenal. That's great advice. Let me ask you in closing, where can we pick up your book and what are the next steps? Can people contact you for speaking or go to your website? Let us know. What is it?
Yeah, for speaking engagements, also I specialize in special recordings for private events such as weddings and birthdays. I even just did a private recording for the birth of a child last week, which was a first for me. You know, like, coming out of the womb, you know, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, the weddings, you know, walking down the aisle of love forever, you know. I try to build it up and create the excitement. I love doing it because you can go to YouTube and see them playing it at their weddings. Everybody's so happy, and I charge, you know, what I consider minimal because they're spending enough money. I'm just happy to do it. I got a home studio here I can record these things in. You can contact me for special recordings, appearances, autographs, all that kind of stuff. At bufferzone.net. Also, there's a special book page there. If you buy your book on Amazon, all I ask at amazon.com is leave a review. If you send me a copy of the review and your address, I'll send you a signed book plate for your book so you have a signed book. I'm always happy to do that. I don't care if I get 1,000 in the mail tomorrow. I'll do them all. And Twitter, follow me at Bruce Buffer. But if you go to bufferzone.net, you can connect through to my Twitter and my Facebook page right there and all the information about my book, plus my podcast radio show I have once a week. It starts in actually 2 o'clock today, California time. I have a lifestyle show on the Crave Network on SureDog.com, and we talk about everything in life, including MMA, and I've got a couple pet peeves I'm going to go into today as we go through a number of different subjects that are happening, you know, in the populace. You want to talk about role models? I'm really sick of Justin Bieber, I'll tell you that much. You know, I'm going to get really into it today. Guy walks out of a restaurant and pees in the bucket they wash the floors with. I mean, come on. You know, where's the respect factor? It's just, God, if anybody needs to be, I don't want to say it. I have certain things I want to say. But Justin, grow up.
I hear you. You can now be famous for peeing in a bucket.
But the problem is this is what the youth of today, you know, the Paris Hiltons and the Kardashians and the Biebers, it's like, these are our role models?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're in trouble. We are in trouble. So,
folks,
I'm not
get out
be part
and pick up Bruce. Get out and pick up Bruce Buffer's book. It's Time, My 360-Degree View of the UFC. It's a fantastic book. And, Bruce, I want to thank you for being on today's show. And it's been an honor. Thank you.
It's been an honor for me. Really appreciate it. It was actually quite enjoyable. Thank you so much. See you
You're
from
welcome.
The Octagon on Saturday night. And also, if anybody emails me through bufferzone.net, it might take me some time, but I never let an email go unanswered.
Fantastic. Thank you, everybody. And I hope you had a great time today on Journey to Success. Once again, my name is Brad Zales, and I've been your guest host for today. Special shout out and a thank you to Tom Cunningham, Too Tall Cunningham, and thank him deeply for having me on today's show along with Bruce Buffer. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Brad. Bye-bye.